bonding bills typically create jobs, and they provide new and revitalized facilities for our students, and they're paying a lot of money for their education, and we should really give them a good experience. Before we begin our meeting, I just want to introduce our new LA, Kara, who is here. Thank you for joining us, Kara Josephson. And remind members that we are meeting on Thursday with the U of M with their bonding request, and we will be sending recommendations to Senator Langseth that day. So, I don't know if we'll have a chance to get together other than our hearing, so be sure to have conversations with me in terms of what you think should be in that letter. I'd appreciate your input. And also, we're having a special hearing on Wednesday afternoon, February 3rd, on the Navient counseling system, and that's going to be in the House. It's a joint hearing with the House Higher Ed Committee and the House and Senate K-12 committees, so we can learn about this system, which has been financed, I believe, with federal money and private money, and it's been a very valuable tool for counselors and high schools to use to prepare to get students ready for college. And as Senator Wieger knows, the P16 projects are really important in our state, and I think you'll really enjoy this and appreciate it. Counselors really like it. So on today's agenda is the presentation of the Minskew's bonding proposal, and welcome, that's Chancellor right. James you. McCormick.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and everyone, and thank you for this opportunity to present our 2010-2015 capital budget request. I also want to take a moment to thank the members of the committee who toured our campuses this past fall with the Capital Investment Committee or otherwise. And I want you to know that we appreciate so much your visits. It gives the colleges and universities an opportunity to showcase some of the good things that are going on, and it also gives them a chance to show you some of the things that we need to invest in. So it just means a lot, and we all appreciate your putting the time in to do that. I'd like to introduce the presidents and the individuals with me at the table. We have with us today Trustee Clarence Hightower, who is the vice chair of the serving as the vice chair of the Finance Committee, and Trustee Hightower is early in his second term on the board. And, of course, Al Johnson, who does a wonderful job with me and will be a major presenter. But I also want to thank those presidents that came today. Patrick Johns from Anoka Ramsey Community College.
Pat, welcome.
Raise your hand. And Sue Hammersmith from Lake Superior College. I got to go back to Metro with Sue, and then Kathy Nelson from Lake Superior, and Phil Davis from Minneapolis Community and Technical College, Joe Patz from Normandale Community College, and Marilyn Hansman representing Don Sapala from Rochester Community and Technical College. Did I miss any presidents at all?
Great. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you for coming. Now, our request is presented in this paper that has been handed out. So I hope each of you have a copy of them, and you can use it if you care to. And particularly when we get to Al Johnson's presentation. And it's online. It's online, and it's also in our publication, Concrete Investments, and in relationship to what you said, Madam Chair, building jobs, knowledge, and opportunity. And that truly is what our goal is in making this request, to build jobs, knowledge, and opportunity. And each of the projects are outlined in a separate page in the publication that we've handed to you. I know that many of you have been involved with the system for a long time, and some of you are very much a part of the system. But for those who may need a little refreshment, we'd like to give you a brief overview of the system. We are a diverse system of 32 colleges and universities, and we're really committed to meeting the needs of the people of Minnesota. We are the largest provider of higher education in the state, providing access to higher education opportunity on 54 campuses in 47 Minnesota communities. We actually deliver our programs at more than 100 locations throughout the state in places like storefronts, community centers, high schools, and other venues, in addition to the campuses that you visit. In a very real sense, and when you look at the numbers, we educate Minnesota, we make it work, and I might just add that I feel so deeply that the great success of Minnesota in past years has a lot to do, in my opinion, with the investment that we've made in the people of Minnesota over the years. And I think we need to continue that if Minnesota is going to be tops in the world and top and high ranking in the country. Our colleges and universities produce more than half of the state's new teaching graduates, more than 80% of the new nursing graduates, 86% of the state's law enforcement officers, and 87% of the new construction trades graduates, and I could go on and on. Every year, we provide training to 9,000 firefighters and emergency first responders. And very interesting, we've now gone over the 400,000 mark of the different students that we serve each year. I think it's 401,000.
Wow.
Now, we serve 63% of Minnesota undergraduates, over four times as many as the private colleges or the University of Minnesota. And we've also acknowledged in our chart the private career schools as part of that presentation. Our enrollment has been healthy, and we are projecting increases of 5.5 to 6.5% for the next 2 years. Actually, it's been higher than that this year, higher in the two-year colleges, less so in the universities, and I'm sure it has to do with the economic situation. Also, in this year's enrollment, more men coming back into the system and fewer women, and that's a change in a trend. Now, this chart, we just want to take a moment with it because we want to be so accurate, and that would be slide five. This chart shows our full-year equivalent enrollment in credit courses, and that's in blue, and that's the FTE and credit courses. And this is our highest point, greatest numbers in the history of the system, and the total headcount shown by the red line, including credit and non-credit courses, now tops the 400,000 mark. And I might add that many people are taking one course or two course to try to move their career along, and we're finding more of that all the time. I think the fact that our enrollment is up, we're serving more students, is certainly good news. However, we all know economic conditions have caused the construction industry to suffer greatly during the recession, including construction firms, construction trades, and architects and engineers. We have heard your concerns about having our bonding projects ready to go to produce many good jobs needed by the workforce. Our bonding proposal will produce, by our best estimate, produce and retain upwards of 8,000 jobs across industry and across the state. Now this is maybe the greatest point that I'd like to make for everybody to consider. As early as this spring, we can have a lot of this stuff out if the bill could be approved early. And you know the Minnesota the Minnesota weather situation. The more we could get approved early and get people working on it this summer, the better, and a lot of our HEPA projects, you know, are really ready to go. Now, you'll hear more about this later in Al's presentation. I want you to know that once again, I'm very conscious, and I'd like to point this, we are accountable to our Board of Trustees, and they're appointed, and we respect that group, and I want you to know that once again, our board has played a major role in the development and approval of this capital request. And by the way, the capital request isn't near the size as the request from individual institutions as we tried to work on what would be the most important priorities. In fact, if I can say that there has been considerably more board involvement and discussion over the last 18 months as this request has been put together in the past, more than ever. Trustee Hightower would like to say a few words about the board's role in the documents that we presented before you for your consideration. Trustee Hightower.
Mr. Hightower, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Chancellor. Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, again, I'm Clarence Hightower, and I am almost a long-term member of the Finance Committee and the Board of Trustees, and very pleased to be here. Let me just say just a word or two about board involvement in this process. Each cycle, we start the process with the issuance of capital guidelines. And these capital guidelines, they follow along close with our board strategic plan, which is in the sixth slide in your packet. And those, we follow our four strategic directions. And those directions include increase access and opportunity, promote and measure high-quality learning programs and services, provide programs and services that enhance economic competitiveness of state and of the state and the region, and to innovate to meet current and future educational needs. As we began this cycle, for this cycle, we added yet another guideline, and this guideline had to do with building and maintaining sustainable campuses. And as we added this goal, it kept in front of us the need to provide long-lasting, high-quality, and low-maintenance learning environments. The board's active involvement began this process in 2008 with our approval of our capital budget guidelines, and that's in slide number 7 of your packet. And these guidelines require that projects meet 4 academic imperatives. The first one is to promote learning. The second one is to respond to workforce needs, to foster partnerships and enable innovation. One of the things that the Board of Trustees take very, very seriously is our stewardship with the campuses that we've been entrusted. And so as we think about this, we have added a priority of sustainability. And our commitment to sustainability drives us to our preservation and the renewal and reuse of existing facilities. We limit construction of new space to doing one of two things, meeting enrollment growth or meeting academic program requirements. As we have gone through this process, you need to know that the board has taken it very seriously. It's been a very thorough process. We've had lots and lots of discussions. We've looked at lots and lots of material. We've had public hearings on what campuses want to have done, on what presidents want to have done on their campuses. And ultimately, we have voted to approve the projects and the priorities that you have before you today. So I just want to assure you that the board has been involved in this process from the very, very beginning, even until it reaches its conclusion. So let me stop now and then hand the presentation over to Al Johnson.
Mr. Johnson, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good afternoon. For the record, I'm Alan Johnson, Associate Vice Chancellor for Facilities at Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. Beginning on slide number 8 now, I'd like to talk a little bit about the process. I think a lot of you have heard this before, but to kind of remind you of the process that we go through in assembling our capital budget. The Chancellor and Trustee Hightower talked about the strategic plan. We also, in the budget formation, look at individual campus master plans and how they see their future development. All this came together then in the board's approval of the guidelines in May of 2008. From that, colleges and universities are given guidance then to prepare their projects and to submit them for board approval. Those projects were submitted after some work on the school's part in December of 2008. We went into an evaluation process, particularly during the month of January 2009, when each project went through a rigorous scoring process, a rating process, and we used people to do that were assembled from all the campuses statewide. Colleges, universities, academic people, facilities, finance, technology people that made up evaluation teams to review, score, and ultimately assign a grade to each of the projects. On slide number 9 then, some more parts of the evaluation that these teams took part in. They looked at how did the projects conform to the guidelines. How did they conform to the master plan of the individual institution? How did it link to academic programs at that institution? As you've heard already, we wanted to see how projects focused on sustainability, preservation and renewal of existing facilities, and right-sizing and getting better use out of existing space. Did these projects justify new space by either enrollment or program requirements? And certainly we were looking at science, technology, classrooms, student services, things of that nature. Slide number 10, a little bit more about evaluation. Projects were to show collaboration between institutions and other partnerships in the communities. We looked at whether or not a project had prior board approval or legislative approval. We looked at a lot of technical details about the status of pre-design, how well space was used, what is the condition of campuses. We looked at operating costs, debt capacity of each college and university, and we looked at whether or not we could phase projects with design in one biennium and construction in a second biennium. All these took place in the evaluation process. That led us on slide number 11. That led us to a preliminary list in January of 2009, 1 year ago. That list was communicated to all presidents and staff and ultimately taken to a Board of Trustees public hearing in February of 2009. And at that hearing, everyone had an opportunity, particularly presidents who might not be happy with the list or might not like their place on the list, not like the fact they weren't on the list, had the opportunity to address the board at that point. The next step was to bring that list to the Leadership Council made up of the chancellor, the presidents, and vice chancellors, and we did that in March. The board reviewed the list in April and ultimately approved the list in June of 2009. So that's kind of how the process brought us together. Some things that came out of that I would characterize as principles on budget principles on slide 12. We wanted to finish projects that were already started. If a project was in the queue, if it was under design, if it had some partial construction, we wanted to be sure that it was funded for completion. We wanted to bring on new projects. We want to have something working in the pipeline, and that might mean a project for design only this biennium, or design and some amount of construction if justified. We wanted to build and renovate sustainably, and that went against our design and construction standards. I think the state of Minnesota is very fortunate in having what's called the B3 standards. And if you take the B3 standards and the Minsky standards and put them together, you have what I believe is equivalent to a silver rating for a LEED project. And those of you may be familiar with LEED. It's a designation of leadership in energy and environmental design, a scoring process that can award a project a LEED certificate. I think we build LEED buildings at the silver level even without going through that process. Nevertheless, some of our schools choose to use a LEED process because it's important to them, and that's a fine thing as well. So to sum up where that has taken us then on slide 13, the proposed capital budget before you is $301 million in general obligation financing, and that includes $110 million in HEPR. $95 million will be financed by the system and by the college or university that gains a project. And so the total request for authorization is $396.8 million, and that's summarized in the other handout, the bonding booklet. Some highlights of that program on number 14, you'll see that a third of those projects go directly in support of science, technology, energy, engineering, and math, over $100 million of investment for STEM programs. 46% of the budget goes to the metro area. That's responding to the growth in the metro area, as well as the ability to increase the baccalaureate delivery in the Twin Cities area. 54% of the budget goes to greater Minnesota. The pie chart on slide 15 gives you a little bit more in that respect, and you can see that 42% of the budget is made up with science lab and allied health projects, and that's followed closely by classroom space at 38%. And together with libraries and learning resource centers, those fundamental academic programs make up 93% of our budget request. We look at how the budget is distributed. You can look on slide number 16, I think that is, 16. And the little pie chart to the upper left is where our students are, where the students are distributed by region around the state. And you see 35% of our full-time equivalents are in the metro area. The 2010 proposed capital budget would indicate that 46% of the budget is allotted to the metro area. And looking over, though, the 12-year period, 98 to 2000, you see it balances out pretty nicely, still keeping 35% of our investment overall in the metro area. Another way to look at that is on slide 17, where we take a look at how it's distributed by institution. And you'll see there in the upper left that 39% of our students are at state universities. And looking at the 2010 proposed budget, 29% of the budget is slated for state universities. It's a bit light in 2010, but looking at it once again over a 12-year period, it's pretty balanced for the state universities at 39%. And with the two-year schools, then you can see that as well. On slide 18, I want to take a moment and talk about renewal and reinvestment. And what I'm talking about here goes to taking care of our existing facilities. This has got nothing to do with building new facilities. This is taking care of the 26 million square feet that you've given us to have stewardship over. And so this is not only HEPR. Let's kind of keep that in mind. This is what do we need to do to keep our buildings up to date, keep them refreshed, keep them modern, and so on. And so we do that through a number of ways. First of all, we monitor the condition of our buildings, of our facilities. We have a life cycle modeling program. We track the backlog of work that has not been funded. We predict future requirements. When will a roof come due for replacement? When will a boiler come due for replacement? And so on. And so we use that program to monitor our condition. Our current backlog is $655 million. That's certainly a large number, but there's some good things about it. First of all, relatively speaking, that has improved over the last 5 years. We are getting better thanks to your help. It is not a tremendous change. It is an incremental improvement in our condition over year because of the money, the capital investment we've been able to make in our existing buildings through HEPR and through our projects. Our goal, it's stated, which has been our goal for many years now, has been to reduce this backlog 50% over 10 years. And that's part of why we have a $110 million HEPR request. It goes hand in hand with our projects. We also want to stay ahead of renewal requirements. We want to be sure that we don't let something fall into the backlog while we're funding some other backlog at another institution. And why is this important? I think on slide 19 you can see that we're a pretty big operation. We have about one-third of the building space in the state, the University of Minnesota, another little slightly larger than we are, and other state agencies also slightly larger, but about a one-third. So it's important that we look at what you've given us to take care of and to focus on taking care of that. On slide 20, I try to answer the question, where does that money come from? How can you take care of your facilities? And there are really only three places in our system where we can get significant monies. First of all, in the capital line item projects. 25 of these projects will decrease existing backlog in existing spaces. 25 of them are taking care of backlog and making things better in existing space. HEPR, Higher Education Asset Preservation and Replacement, also will reduce backlog. Our HEPR program, which is 150 projects this year, they tend to be smaller projects, $25,000 to $1 million. They tend to focus on a building system like a roof or a boiler or a building exterior rather than an entire building. So it's very important that that work hand-in-hand with the capital project.
Mr. Johnson, we usually like to get a copy of that HEPA list for our members so they see that these projects are in campuses all over the state.
You'll get that right after this, then.
Thanks.
Sure. And third, a very important, the third leg of this taking care of our existing facilities is what the campuses are able to do with their own operating budget. We've targeted and have encouraged spending of about $1 a square foot to take care of existing facilities. And that's not, that doesn't count sweeping the floors or changing filters. What that really means is each campus contributes some effort into making major repairs and modernization of existing facilities. So those three taken together takes care of our facilities. Slide 21 gives you some idea of where this budget will take us. The overall budget before you will affect 1.2 million square feet, of which 75%, or about 900,000 square feet, is existing space. And that will be either renovated or renewed, modernized. It will take care of existing space. The other 330,000 square feet is new space. That's either new buildings or new additions that we would propose to construct. And this doesn't count HEPA work. This doesn't count HEPA, which goes directly to repairs and renewal of existing space. Slide 22, I want to talk a little bit about HEPA and give you some idea of how that fits in. Once again, it's a $110 million request this biennium targeted to individual buildings. Systems. The campuses requested this year close to $400 million in projects, and we've had to winnow that down to $110 million. We've allocated in this list that I mentioned and that we'll get to you here shortly, we've allocated based on a number of evaluating factors. First and foremost, college and university priorities. A president tells us his number one, his or her priority is number one, roof replacement, number two, a boiler replacement. We will follow those priorities as much as we possibly can. We also look at keeping everyone in our buildings warm, safe, and dry. That's kind of an overriding factor. We evaluate roofs. We evaluate the building envelopes and systems. We look at fire protection upgrades where those are needed. Elevator code upgrades, which are a serious new requirement. And in all of that, we look at promoting energy efficiency. And you can do quite a bit within the HEPA program in raising the energy efficiency level of our existing buildings. Slide 23 shows you how that HEPA request is made up in the different functional areas. You can see that 47% of it goes to heating, ventilating, and air conditioning projects, 32% of it for roof replacements, and then exterior repairs, plumbing, and so on. On slide 24, I wanted to talk about our history in spending because it's important, I think, to know that the money that you entrust to us is managed and spent quickly. The 2006 appropriation is virtually spent, 99.4%. It's out the door and spent. Fiscal 2008, just in the projects, the appropriation was $186 million. And you can see by the left-hand set of charts, left-hand set of bars in fiscal 08, 89% of that, or $166 million, is under contract, and 66% of it is spent. Now you might ask, well, 89% under contract, why isn't it all under contract? Well, as a project, and all these projects from 08 are underway. They're all in process of construction or renovation or repair. But there's always some amount of money that's left for the end of the project for a purchase of furniture, fixtures, equipment, contingency, final inspection and testing, and things of that nature. So those will still be put under contract by the end of the 2008 program cycle. By mid-2011, that would be 3 years. By mid-2011, this will be fully completed. Fiscal 2008 HEPR was $55 million. You can see 90% of it is under contract. Bids have been very good out of that program, and as we've had savings, we've put the savings towards advanced design for 2010 to help get the 2010 program out the door. And likewise, fiscal 2009 HEPR was $40 million, and we're here today less than 1 year from that appropriation, and 89% of that is under contract, 29% of it is spent. And once again, because of good bids, we're getting savings. We're applying those savings immediately to put other work under design so we're ready for 2010. Speaking of 2010, on slide 25, this is our 2010 project execution graph. I want to draw your attention to the blue lines, because the blue bars indicate when construction begins, construction or renovation. The yellow blocks, which are generally 2 months period of time, the yellow is bid and award. And you can see there's a lot of blue bars that start in 2010. 11 projects in this program can be bid and awarded in 2010. That's about $100 million in construction, 11 projects. 10 projects of those 11 can be bid and awarded within 60 days of enactment. And this is based on 1 June. So if there was an early bonding bill, you could slide that chart to the left by a month or two, depending on how early that could take place. 13 projects are in 2011, bid and award, with construction valued at another $100 million. And then, of course, there's the HEPR at the very top line. $50 million could be awarded in the first 6 months after enactment. All the work in 2010, if this was all funded, all this work would be completed by December of 2012. That's the fastest promise we've ever made, and it's an ambitious schedule, but I think we can do it. We've been working towards doing that. Now, with respect to jobs out of this program, a very rough estimate that we've taken from an average of many sources indicates to us about 20 jobs are created or retained per $1 million. I've seen other numbers at 14 per million, others as high as 28 per million. So I think it's saying 20 jobs per $1 million is a rough estimate, but I think it's within the ballpark. And if you add that, if you calculate that with respect to the entire program, as the Chancellor mentioned, that would retain or create upwards of 8,000 jobs, direct and indirect, over the life of the program. Now, what we found last year in our 2009 HEPR, that because it spreads itself around the state, it's more likely to retain jobs than create new ones, because these are smaller projects. But of course, that's a good thing too. So, Madam Chair, I would switch now, starting on slide number 26, to going over each project, perhaps 30 seconds with each project, just to draw your attention, if that's
fine.
Okay. And we'll use this booklet to kind of walk ourselves through it. I've already talked about HEPR as priority number one. I'd like to just briefly then go over the projects that group themselves into several categories. The first category, priorities number 2 through 7, are those projects that were vetoed in 2008 and 2009. And they're back, as you've seen them before, in the same relative priority. Priority number 2 is at North Hennepin Community College in Brooklyn Park. You can see it's at $14.7 million. It's to convert underused, underutilized interior space into classrooms and office space, primarily focused at business, science career programs, supporting a bachelor's degree programming in conjunction with Metro State University and Minnesota State University Moorhead. This project is ready to go within 60 days as soon as funds are available. Priority number three is a collection of projects at seven campuses. It's what you've seen before, for classroom renovations. Each one of these projects is less than $500,000 each. It will touch a classroom or two at Central Lakes College, Brainerd, Minnesota State Community College, Moorhead, Minnesota State Community and Technical College at Wadena, Minnesota West at Pipestone, Northland Community and Technical College, Thief River Falls, Pine Tech, and Rochester Community and Technical College. Generally, a renovation of one or two labs or rooms or classrooms. These have been very popular, and we appreciate your support for this type of work because it really spreads the dollars around and gets a lot going, particularly with respect to the morale of students and the folks on the campus when they can see a small but yet a very important renovation made. Number four, priority four is at Duluth, at Lake Superior College, the Health Science Center, for $12 million. This will add space for teaching laboratories, primarily for health sciences here. Hospital Nursing Center, some high-tech classrooms, allied health, science and technology. And this is new space in support of the health allied health requirements in the Duluth area. Project number five is at Metropolitan State University. It is a classroom, pure classroom and office building. There are no laboratories in here. It will demolish the existing, unused, unsafe, obsolete building that's located above the university's power plant. It will demolish that two-story building and build a 16,000 square foot classroom building. Project number six is at Mesabi Range at the Eveleth campus, $5.47 million. It is a shop space addition. It will relocate the millwright and other technical programs from off campus, obsolete and very inadequate lease space, onto campus at the 12,000 square foot addition. This project, too, is ready to go as soon as enactment takes place. Project number seven has been on the list for many years. It's the acquisition of land at Dakota County Technical College. This was land that was developed with state money. You'll see there on the map, it's the land. You can see the development area where the decision driving track was constructed about 18 years ago. We have had this on the Capitol list for several years. It was vetoed last year, and I'm happy to say that we are just about ready to sign a purchase agreement with the university for $1.9 million, and then we will withdraw this project as soon as that purchase agreement is signed by both parties, and that should happen within a week or two.
So are you changing your request to $1.9 million?
No, we are funding that with system reserves, and we will withdraw this entire request then as soon as that agreement is signed. We wanted to get this off the charts. At $1.9 million, it's not much more of an impact than it would be if we were paying debt service, and so we can get this taken care of with cash and resolve it once and for all. Those were the vetoed projects, Madam Chair. I'd like to switch now, starting with priority eight. 8 through 23 have been funded in prior years, mostly 2008. had received legislative authorization.
Mr. Johnson, before we go on, did you ever get any indication from the governor or the governor's office about why these projects were vetoed? I know he does usually like to willow down the bonding bill, but any particular, his veto letters say anything, indicate, give us any hint?
Madam Chair, we did not get any indication that he disliked any project. The only indication that we received was that simply he was working with the overall size of the bonding bill and the dollar amount in the bonding bill. As you've taken your trips around the state this past fall and winter, we have also toured with Commissioner Hansen and his staff, and we've particularly taken him to these vetoed projects, shown him those vetoed projects. So they're hopefully the governor and his staff are more aware of the project, the need for the project, and we hope that that will carry the day this time.
Madam Chair.
Senator Roebling.
I'm just thinking that some of these projects that were vetoed are additions. Although there's the classroom renovations are sprinkled in here too, but I'm wondering if there hasn't been some concern about adding additional space that then has to be maintained. I think that could have been a factor in some of the decisions, because the more building space you have, the more maintenance and heating and cooling and just costs associated with keeping those facilities going. In some cases, you may have lower costs if it's a renovation, but in brand new additions, it's another new expense for the institutions.
Madam Chair, Senator Roebling.
Johnson.
I agree that added space has additional costs, of course, associated with it, and we look very closely at that, and we have to balance that with what that additional space will do. And again, overall, I think that our request focuses on renovation and repair, and in those cases, and there are other cases in here, you'll see new square footage, and it's we feel that the institution, as well as internally to our office, that the project has been justified based on its need.
Madam Chair.
Senator Coring.
Madam Chair, do you want to wait until the end, or can we just ask a question?
Ask a question.
Okay. Because this actually kind of goes, I was going to wait till the end, but it kind of goes with what Senator Roebling was saying. As you look actually on slide number 21, where you have this pie chart of 700,000 square feet of renovate, renewal 175,000 and 330,000 square feet of new construction. With the economy the way it is, I understand why everybody's going back to school, because they really, what a great time to go back to school. And I'm sure that almost all of your institutions are seeing double-digit increases. I was just over at Metro State, and they said they've got a 13% increase in students. Is that correct? Yep. But what I want to know is, I hope you're not, and I probably know the answer to this, I hope you're not making your future plans based on the numbers that you're seeing now, because I kind of think they're artificial numbers. I think once the economy gets going, people can find good jobs. I think you're going to see all of your institutions on a decline. And then you have, do you understand what I'm saying, Mr. Johnson? I hope you're not basing building new classrooms, saying, my goodness, we need all these new classrooms. But then when you see maybe double-digit decreases in years to come, God forbid, and then you've got all this space to maintain. It kind of is the same kind of question as Senator Roebling had. Can you answer that?
Madam Chair, Senator Coring.
It's my new toy.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
You're absolutely right, and that's something that we've been very careful to keep an eye on, that we're not building for today's instant growth, but rather we're looking at trends over time. and at the population centers in the state, Duluth, St. Cloud, Rochester, the Twin Cities, where population is growing, where the demands are up for even first-generation college students. And it's very likely that as the economy improves, we've seen cases where it might turn around again. But we still have population growth. Even though high school students may be coming down, we still have the immigrant population and other growth in the system. So I guess my response would be that we've carefully looked at that, and we're not building for today what we are building long term for the future.
And I think, and we are trying to get more students into college, more of these first generation students. I don't know what the chancellor's going to say, but that's been kind of a big effort on our part, is to just for students to be prepared to take the rigorous classes and get into college.
Madam Chair, just Senator Coring, just to add, obviously more people are back in college. Your point is right because of the economic situation; they want to better themselves. But I'm looking at some statistics, national and international statistics, 10 and 12 years ahead. I think generally about 43% of the Minnesotans have some higher education, whether it be a two-year or a university degree. We now have, I think the country is about 39%. There was a time, the last decade or so, where America was first. We're now 10th. We have countries like Korea, South Korea, and others that are now 55% of their population have some college or have two-year or four-year. It seems to me one of the great concerns all of us will need to think about in Minnesota, if we want this state to continue to be a leader in the country and America to be a leader in the world, I believe that we're going, and some of the trends suggest that more and more of the jobs are going to require some post-secondary education, either a two-year degree or four, or just some education. And if that's the case, we're going to have an increasing percentage of our high school graduates. We've got to get more graduates. First of all, we have to get more people through high school. And then those that get through, we're going to have more of them have an opportunity to have a post-secondary experience. And along with that, with our changing demographics here, with the new immigration and so on, we're going to have more of the individuals that are not getting degrees as quickly to have more opportunities too. So I think we have to think about the future of Minnesota being near the top or the top in the country of more opportunities. And I would like to think that we're being very careful about thinking this through. But I think if the job were full opportunity, it would go down some. So I just wanted to say for the future, I believe that we're going to have to make even more investments to stay competitive.
Madam Chair, can I just say one other thing? Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is just more of a comment, as we see technology changing, let's just like the phone that I have, this phone is obsolete now because I went to the phone store the other day and they said, oh, that's an old one. We've got these new ones that load much quicker. And the point of that is technology is changing so much. And with the governor wanting us to do more classes online, and now a friend of mine was telling me that he's in Alaska and he talks to his parents on Skype. I've never heard of Skype, but I guess you can talk to your parents. You know, in the future, let's say the way technology is changing, let's say 10 years down the road, you can sit in front of your computer and you're the instructors at the class, and you're not even really going to the institution. I'm sure we're still going to need institutions, but I wonder how technology is going to change the way we school students in the future, where putting all this money, and it's a lot of money, into bricks and mortar, I wonder if that's the route to go in the future, if that's going to be our future. And that's just more of a comment than anything.
Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to make a brief comment on project number three, or priority three, which involves the seven campuses and the classroom renovations. And I think that this is really, really important and a really critical component. And it's perhaps not the most glamorous of all the projects that are entailed here, but I think that we have to be careful not to underestimate the impact that projects like this have on the students that are walking through your doors, that are considering whether or not they are going to sign up to attend your institution or not. And having, I know that as a state, that's a critical investment that we need to make.
Thank you. Okay, you want to continue?
Okay, I'm up to project number 8, and since we have a few to go, I'll try to speed this up, Madam Chair, if that's what you'd like here. Mm-hmm. Number 8 is at Alexandria Technical College for $4.3 million. It's basically a renovation of the main building and a small addition. The Law Enforcement Center at Alex Tech was constructed and funded in 2008. That is complete. And this project goes back into existing spaces and helps remodel some of the spaces that are left behind. Number 9 is at Minnesota State Community and Technical College in Moorhead. It's a library and classroom addition. The Moorhead campus of the Tech College has shown phenomenal growth in the last several years, and this will improve the library space, added some classroom space at that institution.
Madam Chair.
Senator Roebling.
I noticed that Moorhead University also had a library addition, or a library remodel, I guess it was. How close are the facilities? They both have library projects going on in Moorhead, and I'm just wondering if there's been any review and talk about sharing any of those facilities.
Madam Chair, Senator Roebling, I believe the campuses are a couple of miles apart. The technical college libraries have traditionally been more of technical manuals, different type of collections. They've generally been very, very inadequate. As you'll see later on, we have another initiative for that. And so I would say that the library and the resource center is particularly geared to the technical college environment at this particular campus, as opposed to the university environment at Moorhead State. Project number 10 is at Anoka Ramsey Community College for $5.3 million. It's a fine arts building renovation. A new fine arts building was funded and constructed out of the 2008 program, and this will go into the existing fine arts area and renovate this 40-year-old spaces that are partially being vacated into the new fine arts addition. Project number 11 is at the Hennepin Technical College. It touches both campuses at Eden Prairie and Brooklyn Park. It renovates, in this case, the 38-year-old facilities. These are identical campuses, and it renovates and has a small addition at both campuses to expand and modernize their learning resource center / library. Project number 12 is at Minneapolis Community and Technical College. It's a renovation of their workforce program areas. It's basically the technical college laboratory spaces. These are 30-year-old spaces that have not had any major attention in that period of time. And so we're looking at programs that are will be directly impacted, such as nursing, dental assistant, architectural technology, air traffic control, computer security, heating, ventilating, air conditioning, and so on. Basic technical college education and training type courses. This will eliminate the need to lease space off campus, bring students back on campus, and eliminate the lease cost for non-state space. Number 13 is at Ridgewater College at Willmar. It's $14.3 million. This was also partially funded in 2008. It too is geared towards technical college education in renovating inefficient and obsolete facilities that directly support the trades, technology, engineering, and math, things like the veterinary technology and agricultural program at that Willmar campus. Number 14 is the at the MinWest Community and Technical College at Worthington. It's a renovation of a field house, small addition. It has become a partner with the new YMCA that was recently constructed on campus. And it, while of course the title of the project is Field House, it is a facility that supports their physical education programs, health programs, law enforcement, physical therapy, and so it does have an academic component as well. What makes this project so exciting is the YMCA that is adjacent to it and that is a shared community resource now at the Worthington campus. 15 for $13 million is at South Central College Faribault. It is generally a renovation of the 46-year-old structure, improving classroom space, lab space, create a learning center, and basically work with the building, a building that has not had any attention in the last 30 years. 46 years. Number 16 at Anoka Ramsey Community College at Coon Rapids, a bioscience and health addition. This project goes directly to help support a collaboration with Metropolitan State University, where a Bachelor of Science in Nursing can be offered. It also has partners with Bemidji State University in biosciences and healthcare programs. Number 17 at North Hennepin Community College is also a bioscience and health career center addition. The $26 million project that goes directly, once again, for supporting bachelor degree delivery, master's degree, in concert with Metropolitan State as well as Moorhead and St. Cloud State University. Number 18, back to Moorhead, at the university site, the Livingston Lord Library and Information Center renovation, $14.9 million. This is also a building that hasn't had major attention since 1960, and it will renovate and replace much of the basic infrastructure of the building, electrical, plumbing, fire protection, and so on, for a modern library and learning resource center. Number 19 is at Southwest Minnesota State at Marshall. It continues some work that we began last year in renovating science labs, existing science labs. Here again, we have a facility that hasn't seen much attention in the last 37 years, and it will go towards directly supporting things like biology, medical technology, chemistry, environmental science, and so on. Project number 20, St. Cloud State University, for $42 million. This will provide a new integrated science and engineering laboratory facility directly supporting science and technology programs and math initiatives. This will also impact on research and collaboration for teaching and engineering sciences as well. Number 21 is at Dakota County Technical College, Transportation and Emerging Technology. This is a renovation of the transportation-related technical college programs, things like diesel and truck mechanics and that sort of program. It also helps create some common classrooms and laboratory spaces for those programs. Number 22 is at St. Cloud Technical College. You'll recall in 2006 the college purchased the Allied Health Center from Health Partners, and the request this year now is for $5 million to renovate the facility for a modern Allied Health Center, converting it from a private health clinic to multi-purpose classroom, lab space, and so on. Number 23, it's Rochester Community and Technical College. It's a project to help co-locate the Workforce Center on the campus. We're requesting $3.2 million, and we're hoping for support through the Department of Economic the Department of Employment and Economic Development for the balance of that funding for an $8.5 million project to co-locate the Workforce Center that's currently in Rochester. Our portion of the request, the $3.2 million, will go directly towards infrastructure, mechanical system upgrades to connect the facility to the Olmsted County waste-to-energy facility. Project 24, which I believe this is the first, that's right, this is the first of the new projects that you have not seen before. Project 24 is another bundling of several smaller projects that were geared towards renovation specifically for technology, for sciences, engineering, and math. And these are at nine campuses, Bemidji State University, Century College, Minnesota State Community and Technical College in Moorhead, Minnesota State University, Moorhead, the Northeast Higher Education District at Hibbing Community College, at Itasca Community College, and at the Eveleth campus of Mesabi Range, Northwest Technical College in Bemidji, and South Central College, all to renovate one or two rooms directly in support of science and technology programs. Number 25 is at Minnesota State University, Mankato. It is for the design of a clinical science building. We're asking for $1.9 million. This will design a new facility to serve as an allied health and regional health facility, primarily providing clinical services in dental, audiology, and medical programs. This is to help facilitate and to bring together these programs that are scattered around the campus. New construction funding would be requested in 2012, so we're anticipating and looking ahead for about a $29 million project in 12, and this would design it and have it ready for funding in 2012. Number 26 is at Normandale Community College for an academic partnership center and classroom building. It is fundamentally a classroom building with 30 classrooms and offices. This goes towards offsetting their current classroom deficit, and at a community college has shown phenomenal growth in the last several years. It will also serve as a location for four-year partnerships, for partnerships with four-year universities, including Metropolitan State and Minnesota State Mankato, to deliver four-year baccalaureate programs at the Normandale campus. This is a case where we're asking for both design and construction in one biennium. We believe that we've taken there's enough pre-planning has taken place that we can accelerate and fast-track this program and this project and have it ready as early as January of 12. Number 27 at Bemidji State University is a business building addition and demolition and design for a future funding in 2012. This is really a very unique project in that it uses a mix of both GO bonds and revenue bonds for student union space and includes considerable demolition of obsolete and spaces that are no longer needed. This would design for a 2012 $17 million project. It would also demolish the first of three buildings, demolish Maple Hall, downsizing, right-sizing that campus location. Number 28 is at Metropolitan State University in St. Paul, $3.4 million. This is for property acquisition and for the design of a science education center. Metropolitan State has only two small obsolete laboratories. This would build a science building for the university and acquire the property to allow that as well for lab space, classrooms, and office space. This would be in direct support of the need for Metropolitan State University to deliver baccalaureate and upper division and baccalaureate and master's degree level degrees to a growing population in the metropolitan area.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Roebling.
Thank you. I'm wondering how much would the final cost of this project be? This is just for design.
Madam Chair, Senator Roebling, anticipated construction is $32 million, which would be a request in 2012.
Madam Chair.
Senator Roebling.
You know, I'm wondering, projects number 16 and 17 are both in that general area of the metropolitan area, and they're both also for bioscience and allied health or health career additions. And one of the things you said when you're talking, for example, about Metro Hennepin Community College is that Metro State was going to be offering four-year degrees at that facility. And I'm just kind of puzzling over this about all of these health career buildings in a close proximity to each other. And we're talking between Anoka Ramsey Community and North Hennepin Community, that's $43 million for health additions, and then we have $32 million for Metro State. And if Metro State gets that building built, how many courses will be offered over at North Hennepin? I'm just wondering if the demand is that great in that area that we would think of doing three big projects up there, or what the thought process is.
Madam Chair, Senator Roebling, I guess I'd answer that in saying yes, the demand is there, and that while these schools are all in the metro area, it's still a matter of where are the students. And in the case of North Hennepin and Anoka Ramsey and Hennepin Tech, I mean, they're still serving a clientele that desires the service at that location. The four-year degrees that are granted by Metropolitan State University at those sites, and in fact, Metropolitan State University has the charter to deliver programs all over the metro area, and do it at our two-year schools. They do it at lease spaces. But when you need, when you should be expanding your university science degree and science programs, you need a science facility. You need to be able to have a science facility here in the St. Paul area to serve that growing four-year baccalaureate need. Metropolitan State University is, you know, frankly, it's the affordable four-year university, state-funded, state-supported university in the metropolitan area. And, you know, we see that as being able, and the chancellor has charged it to grow considerably over the next several years in support of the demand that we see in the metropolitan area.
Oh, Madam Chair.
Senator Roebling.
And I understand that, and I was at Metro State for the tour when we were talking about their building, and I think that probably is an important need for them. But I still am a little puzzled about having Anoka Ramsey and North Hennepin, and they're all very near each other in the metropolitan area. And I'm wondering if the needs, say, of the South Metro area are being served, because for people from my area, the South Metro, to get through the Twin Cities and get to these campuses is a bit of a problem. And so I'm just wondering if we thought about this geographically and the concentration of this all in one area.
Chancellor.
Yes, Madam Chair and Senator Roebling. The Normandale project will provide opportunities also for the state universities to do some teaching. And I think the plan that is emerging here, there's some states, Florida, where they've shifted their community colleges into being four-year baccalaureate institutions. And I think our belief is that we need to keep the community and technical colleges doing what they're doing, the technical colleges particularly, but there's no reason why we can't serve a constituent need on those campuses of our existing universities. And that's why we have two or three of the universities at Anoka. They're now St. Cloud and Metropolitan State. Mankato is working in rented facilities now with Normandale. And I believe we're trying to bring the baccalaureate programs to the community college locations in the metro. And we have 3 million people here. It's projected, depending on what projections you look at, of going from up another 500,000 to 1 million. And also, we're very sensitive about the University of Minnesota's thinking as they move in their direction of being more of a national research university, and believing that we need to fill in some of that baccalaureate education in terms of the metro area. So the Normandale project will provide opportunities. And some of these classes might be taught in the science facilities at the two-year college, too. But that's an attempt to bring the metro. And, of course, the metro project, we don't have a project in here at Century, because the metro project will do the science on the eastern metro. And so that was an attempt to serve the need. We believe that these are projections on greater baccalaureate need in the Twin Cities.
Madam Chair.
Senator Roebling.
And I appreciate that, and I think the need does exist. I just wanted to be available throughout the metro. I've actually seen some more of the for-profit institutions springing up in the South Metro areas, partly because I don't know that Minsku has completely fulfilled the needs there. But then, you know, when you think of it, it takes away a more affordable option for the people who live in that area. You know, they may enroll in the for-profits, but it is more expensive. And so I just want to make sure that options are available throughout the metropolitan area.
Madam Chair and Senator Roebling, I think that's a good point, and I think we increasingly need to be sensitive to all of that, and thank you for your observation on that.
I think she does bring up a good point is in terms of Anoka Ramsey and North Hennepin Community College. I don't know how far away they are from each other, Coon Rapids and Brooklyn Park. I don't know if there's anybody here that knows that, but they do seem to be both in that kind of northwest.
Pat, how long? How far? 12 miles.
12 miles, yeah. 15. And that may be why Normandale is so crowded.
Well, Madam Chair, I think Scott County has no Minsku facility at all. All of the people from Scott County, which has been the fastest growing county in the whole state, go to Normandale. And, you know, so and Carver County floods in there. They have no Minsku facility. So, obviously, there is a high demand on Normandale from these fast growth areas, and it's just one institution that can hardly handle the influx of students that want to come there, but those students do not want to travel to the northern side of the metro area, and I'm just hoping that we're addressing their needs enough.
Well, you'd be surprised where students travel from to go to Metro State. I think my class coming up, not only do I have students from Coon Rapids, I have them from Hugo, sometimes from Wisconsin. Now, they really travel, Lakeville. Mm-hmm. They come a long distance to go to Metro State because mm-hmm. of the lack of a four-year institution in the metro area other than Metro State.
I'm sure.
Senator Latz.
To that point, I think that shows why we need to extend the Southwest LRT down into Scott County.
Let's talk about that Dan Patch line again.
Wrong committee.
Oh, okay. Wrong committee.
Okay, Mr. Johnson, I think you're almost done.
Just about done, Madam Chair. Number 29 is at Rochester Community and Technical College. It's for design at $987,000 for a renovation of classroom space. Here again, we're going into some 40-year-old spaces and renovating, giving that the modernization and renewal that has been lacking. This is a very interesting project in that it also contemplates installing a wind turbine, a small wind turbine, to help with energy efficiency. It will also be connecting and facilitate the connection to the Olmsted County waste-to-energy system as well. So a very sustainable project in that regard. Number 30, $3.4 million, is a bundling of projects. These are specifically a technical college library renovations. The projects range in size anywhere from $50 million to $1.5 million. It touches on eight campuses, Anoka Technical College, Central Ace College at Staples, the Tech College at Wadena, Minnesota West at Canby, Minnesota West at Pipestone, Riverland Community College at Albert Lea, St. Cloud Tech, as well as St. Paul College, and to goes directly to renovate spaces that are in support of their modernization of their library and learning resource center needs. And then finally, the Bemidji State University and Minneapolis Community Technical College property acquisition, number 31 at $7.3 million. The Bemidji State University project you've seen before, that's $2 million to purchase 11 acres from the foundation. The foundation acquired the property in support of the university several years ago. It demolished the old high school building, and the site is now clear. The university would like to add it to its holdings as it's the only available land in the university's area that could be used for a future expansion of the university. And then Minneapolis Community and Technical College, we have $5.3 million requested for a portion of a city block that is adjacent to downtown, adjacent to the college in downtown Minneapolis. This is no doubt the last opportunity, the last opportunity to acquire property at a reasonable price in this current down market that would aid and facilitate the expansion of Minneapolis Community and Technical College, as well as the space that Metropolitan State University uses at that campus. And that is a quick summation of all our projects. I think if I'd had to sum it up and say that there are three major themes here. There's probably a dozen, but I like the three that focus on STEM, for science and technology and engineering and math. There's classrooms and health centers as well, but I'd say it's the meat and potatoes of what we're charged to do for the people of Minnesota. Secondly, sustainability. We're repurposing, we're renewing, we're renovating, we're taking care of what you've given us to take care of. And third, speedy execution. We're anxious to get the work out, and we're ready to go as soon as a bonding bill is enacted. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. We have some legislators who did want to address the committee, some on the committee and some not. But before we move on, we want to take questions for the Chancellor or for Mr. Johnson or Mr. Hightower. Senator Sandel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just a brief one, and maybe even Senator Lynch can help me on this one, but there are several library renovations and so on here, maybe even a new library or two, I'm not sure. When I go into the library at the University of Minnesota Rochester, I see a room with, I'll just say 20 to 30 computer workstations on it. And it seems to me they tell me that on those workstations is literally the world of reference material. And I don't know if that's true or not, but I'll take them as their word. Do we think that way in terms of our library? Are our libraries still pretty much geared towards books and certainly some electronics? But it seems to me, at least given our Rochester reference, that library, there is no book in it. It is truly total electronic. That's my question.
Mm-hmm. And who would like to respond?
Madam Chair, Senator Stenjum, I think we think that way. We think technology. Libraries are not what they used to be. And our libraries are they're becoming known as learning resource centers. I can't get away from the name library. I married a librarian. She won't let me get away from that name. But I believe that you will find that when these modernizations, and in the case of Morehead University, Morehead State, that even though it's a large library renovation, it is full, chock full of technology. And you can see that as you go around. You see some of the spaces that we've already renovated in libraries and how much they are used for accessing the Internet, having computer workstations. In fact, it's where most of our online programs are taken. Students are not sitting at home, but they're sitting in our libraries or learning resource centers, taking their online courses, searching the Internet for information. and as well as the printed publications that are there. So our modernization does consider the technology that's available.
I just did a little library resource training class at Metro State, and I found out that journals will often be online, but only after they're a year old, because they want the libraries to continue the subscriptions to help pay for them. So if you want something more current, they need to subscribe to the journals, and they have them in the library. So that's one example of where they still need to have them. And then, I don't know, are all books online? Are they all scanned and online now? I don't know if that's the case.
Madam Chair, that's the question.
Right.
As I walk in that room, I don't know that.
Right. Someone's in the hallway, in the audience is shaking their head. They're not all online.
Madam
Chancellor.
Chairman and Senator Sitchin, I think that's a great question, and we're definitely moving toward the technology. But I don't know if any of you visited, but that Moorhead project is not a new library. We have built a couple of new ones in the recent past. That's not a new library. That's taking on a facility. And if some of you visit that facility, you know that it's in pretty bad shape. Okay. So we've got a building that is a library that we're renovating. It's not a big new library, but it'll be a significant building when we're done.
Any more questions for the panel here? Okay, then I'd just like to hear from a couple members who are not on the committee first, if committee members don't mind, who asked to address us, and we'll start with Senator Dibble.
Thank you,
and
Madam Chair. Would
you like
me
them to stay up here, or maybe you don't need to? We'll call you forward if we have more questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, would you like me to address you from here or from the table?
I think it's fine if you stay there.
Great, thank you. Well, thank you, Madam Chair and members. And we do also have Phil Davis and Reed Webster from Minneapolis Community and Technical College. I'm just here not to gain special attention to MCTC's project, but just to attend to this project, because I support MCTC enthusiastically. And this is a request by them to kind of take the next step in a number of steps that have been taken in recent years.
You're talking about their project number 12?
Project number 12, yes, Madam Chair. They also have a property acquisition request, project number 31, but I'll deal with them separately.
Okay.
So just to delve in and provide just a little bit more detail, and thank the committee and members and the legislature and the governor for all the past support for MCTC. It's been fairly significant, the new library and acquiring the Billy Graham property, the co-location with Metro State, significant renovation to existing labs. This is an almost $13 million project that will renovate 80,000 square feet of space, almost entirely in the T building, which is the big building that fronts on Hennepin Avenue that most people are very familiar with. It's the big building that sits next to the nice new glass library. MCTC, just as you all know probably as well as I do, serves about 15,000 students, very, very diverse student body. Many of the folks who come to MCTC have been traditionally underserved, very, very effective in putting low-income, diverse minority folks into trades and professions where they've been traditionally underrepresented. They do a fantastic job. They have a wide array of degree programs and training programs and technical professions. We'll hear a little bit from Senator Olson in a minute on that. It will eliminate $7.6 million backlog on the asset preservation roles. I think that is important and significant. Specifically, it'll deal with life and safety accessibility issues in one of their program areas. I'm probably most excited about the remodeling of the existing undersized and inadequate nursing and health science labs. Senator Roebling's inquiry earlier, but they have a very, very significant nursing program at MCTC. They're going to bring the air traffic control program that they've been running for quite a while out in Eden Prairie back to the main campus and provide students with a space there. It also is going to deal with some of the support space, some of the infrastructure needs, some of the vertical circulation, some of the other technology and HVAC issues that they've got. Throughout the T building. And that, Madam Chair, is the crux of the proposal. The land acquisition piece is $5.3 million. I was interested to see how $2 million buys 11 acres in Bemidji and 5.3 buys a portion of a block in downtown Minneapolis. Just shows you the difference. And that's just a block further north of the Billy Graham site, acquiring portions of that block, kind of straddling two different corners.
How much did we pay for that site, do you remember?
Billy Graham, was it $9 million? $10 million.
Wow.
So the college has been growing. It's grown significantly in recent years, I think like 47%. So their space needs continue and are indisputable. In the interest of full disclosure, there is some concern from the local jurisdiction, from the local council member and folks at the city of Minneapolis. So we probably have to work through some issues of concern on that property acquisition.
Who owns the property now?
One of the parcels was Billy Graham property, and then it was acquired by CVS to build a drugstore, and then sold it to Lunds, and Lunds was going to put a grocery store, and then they started looking up the avenue to put a grocery store farther up, Hennepin Avenue. That's one part of the parcel. I'm not sure the other part. I think it's all owned by Lunds now, actually, yeah.
It's all what?
All owned by Lunds.
By Lunds?
Yeah. But they're looking at the empty vacant parcel just south of the Orpheum Theater for a grocery store there now. So they're looking to divest themselves of that property.
Okay.
So, but I'm also always very supportive of the entire Minsky list.
Good. I think Senator Olson also has an interest in this project. She's been doing quite a bit of investigative work on the carpentry program that I guess this project proposes, cabinet making. This project proposes to eliminate that program. So maybe you could share with us. And
sure.
I don't know if anyone has any questions, we could get Mr. Davis to come up and respond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I must confess, members, that I do not have any campuses of Minsky in my district. I do have a lot of people in my district, however, that appreciate the educational opportunities and take advantage of them. The second caveat is that I usually don't meddle in other people's districts or in issues attempting to micromanage some of the agencies and work that's being done. But this is the first time that I have been contacted by students of a program, and to call my attention to the potential closure. This started back when we were still in session of a program that really is quite unique and in a, I think, a special place in the Minneapolis community and technical college. As Senator Dibbles pointed out, there's some both unique needs and opportunities that for serving that this institution represents. When I just saw today what the request was, I had not seen that before today. This request essentially focuses on the technical program areas, and if this program, which is proposed for closing after they did not take students at the beginning of this year, they went ahead and have closed, are eliminating it at the end of this year, is on the fast track. The bids are to be let in May, and 2 months later, construction's going to take place. There are three programs in cabinetry in the metro area, one at Suburban Hennepin and one in St. Paul. Both of those two, and the one in Minneapolis, the other two focus on preparing for the industry that serves the housing market, which is in a downturn right now. This one is unique in that it supports the custom aspect of the industry, and it that's an area that I think not only is stable but probably will grow as people are looking to stay in their own homes, and upgrade or remodel, and do things that often require some unique skills and specialty, and also a valuing of craftsmanship. I'm not going on just hearsay. I've spent a fair amount of time over the summer. I've met with Chancellor McCormick on two occasions, once at the state fair, And I've also met with President Davis, who came to my office, and I invited myself to his office and had a tour of the program, had a chance to meet the staff and to meet and talk with students. And I've talked with other of my colleagues in the House, some who have expressed concerns on the broader range of some of the nature of the technical programs that are being eliminated, and are concerned that there may be a trend here that we ought to be looking at. I had shared with some of you a couple of interviews that in a publication I received, a national publication. One, John Ratzenberger, who is the star of Cheers, apparently, is starting a TV program on nuts, bolts, and thingamajigs. And he made the comment in here that we're running out as a nation and as a culture of people who know how to make and build things. And he said, you know, there's a national perception that people who work with their hands and are not as bright as people who go to college. But he said, from all that he's known, some of these folks are the ones that are the brightest. They're the smartest people I know. And he said, and I've worked at as a carpenter. And he said, you can't have a low IQ and be able to read a blueprint. The other one is from Matthew Crawford, who has his PhD in political philosophy and just wrote a book called Shop Class as Soul Craft, An Inquiry into the Value of Work. And he made some interesting comments about the nature of work, but he also addressed some of the issues that have been concerning us about outsourcing of jobs. I won't read it all, but I'll share this with anybody who would like to do it. There not only the manufacturing jobs where you can ship things in a container are going, but even information technology, where people are well-educated, they can send their work by wire. But one economist said you can't hammer a nail over the Internet, and similarly, the Indians cannot fix your car. So the point seems to be that if a job has to be done in person or on site, it's safe from the logic of outsourcing. So the manual trades are relatively secure compared to many other jobs. I add that one of the things that impressed me visiting that program, I was blown away by both the capacity, the size, and the equipment in that lab. Not all of it's new. It's been accumulated over the years, but it's been well cared for, and it's appreciated. In fact, the part-time lab tech that keeps that going, many of the students treat as a teacher because they've learned so much from him as well. The other thing is that, well, we often look at college as preparing us to work for somebody else. This program was very entrepreneurial in its approach, and the instructors were exceptional in the fact that they sought out individual goals and are helping people not only learn the skills but to develop their career plan and be able to pursue it. Two women were there working on their business plan. One already had her degree in architecture, and they were working to set up a business in kitchen remodeling. There were others that were concerned. They said they're proposing to try to cooperate with suburban Hennepin and put in a night program out there. I'm transit dependent. There's no way I might be able to get a bus out there, but I'd never get home. Not only the nature of the program, the uniqueness was very impressive to me, as well as the fact that it's in a place that I think is very critical to the serving of a broad range of people. And I think that to eliminate it, a program of this sort that we know of only two others in the country that would compare to it, is kind of poor stewardship both of the educational opportunities as well as the resources. And so I'm just adding my word of caution on this. I'm not suggesting that the aspects of this might not be done, but I wish that there were a way that we could keep and exercise some stewardship of a very, very important resource, one exemplar, but an important one, rather than do away with something that we'd never be able to recreate. It would be too costly. The investment has been made, and I think that there are great people find this. I think they've had no trouble recruiting students or placing students. The president told me I think the 85% were placed even with the downturn. That's quite exceptional. And I'm not sure how many of the academic degree programs could even, could claim that kind of a high placement rate at this time. So there's, I just wanted to insert the result of some of my research. I've talked to Louise Sundin, who has represented the Minneapolis teachers. She shares this concern. She's on the Board of Trustees as well. Met this morning with Commissioner McElroy and several of the staff from MNSCU. I have been talking to people, and I have not been convinced by those sharing the process that that the data that has been used is what justifies the conclusion, is the right data, and that the conclusion of eliminating this program is in order. So I want to plant that seed with you, and as we go forward, to consider how that might shape our decisions.
Well, you can see that Senator Olson is very passionate about this program. President Davis, she loves your program at your college, and I imagine that eliminating programs is sometimes like kicking out a kid.
Thank you, Senator.
One of your children.
It is much like that. Phil Davis, president of Minneapolis Community and Technical College, and indeed, Senator Olson has been a very passionate advocate, and I've enjoyed having her on campus and showing her the lab. It's a wonderful lab, as she's described. If I can, the challenge for us, and I think for not only MCTC, but for institutions in our system, is that, like MCTC, we lost something over 11% of our appropriation starting fiscal year 2010. So we were faced with increasing enrollment. At the very time, we had fewer resources available to serve students. We went through a very deliberative process. We talked with labor unions, who reminded us that there are many, many people in the construction trades who are sitting on the bench. We talked with our business.
But do you still have an electricians program?
We have a very small electricians program, Madam Chair. in fact, we have many trades programs. I know Senator Olson is very concerned about elimination of trades programs. We have machine tool. As you heard in Mr. Johnson's presentation, our request is going to be devoted exclusively to technical programs that includes welding, heating, ventilation, and air conditioning. Construction trades, like Construction Electricity, just recently got a new lab themselves as part of the Billy Graham project. So we too share the concern and don't cherish eliminating programs. But the reality is we have fewer dollars, and so we've gone through a very, very deliberative process and looked at where our strengths are, where our sister institutions can step in and continue to serve, as is the case in the case of cabinet making. So we have both a northern and southern suburban program, as well as a program that does serve underrepresented students in the inner city at St. Paul College. We work with those institutions to try to make certain that we can help and they can help us as we make this transition, but I appreciate the angst about the elimination of a program.
Chancellor?
Yes, Madam Chair. I had a long discussion with the Senator Taffer. I look forward to that, actually, meeting all of you there as often as I can. I think I need to step up to the plate and take some responsibility and accountability also. And I'm sure if the any board member would be here, they would agree. And we have no tolerance for a president having a deficit. So we manage our system, and I it's been made very clear to me if there's a deficit in the system, the board would be firing their chancellor quickly. And so the presidents are under tremendous pressure to do the very best we can with what the appropriation is and make the decisions that they have to make. I usually do not get involved in which of the decisions, although it is reviewed, and if it's the last program in the system, we do look at it even more carefully. But the pressure's on to balance budgets, and I believe that we are now have gone beyond the programs that don't have students into some of the other things, and those are the things that were being cut. And I don't believe in coming here to whine about the financial situation. It's all tough. We all know that. But the presidents are under tremendous pressure to cut costs and balance budget. Whether this is the right one, more you may want to add to that, but there would have to be programs cut. All of them would have support. The ones that haven't had students are pretty well gone.
Okay. Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I don't know if this conversation is being recorded or not, but I hope it is, because
it is.
This is probably the first of hundreds of these kinds of conversations we're going to have in this particular fiscal environment, showing that, you know, unless we're willing to provide resources, you know, to the major services that the state provides, you know, every single thing we do as a state is important, has value, has a constituency. I think President Davis takes no joy in eliminating something like the custom cabinet program. Now, I'm not here to argue for its elimination or its continued maintenance. I think Senator Olson, you know, has been, her imagination has been engaged, you know, by this particular program. You know, every time I go out and tour an agency or a facility, I know I'm amazed at the quality of services that are delivered to the citizens of the state of Minnesota by our state employees, and they all deliver value. But we're coming into the second half of a biennium with a $1.2 billion deficit in this existing cycle, and looking forward to, people guess, anywhere from $6 to $8 billion in the next 2 years with not a new nickel in sight that anyone seems to be willing to put on the table. So I would just, you know, consider this conversation in that context. It's fair for the legislature to kind of pick and choose winners and losers and pick our favorites and tell the agencies not to eliminate those things. That's fine. We can do that. But at the end of the day, we're going to lose significant, important services that have tremendous value in people's lives. I think in defense of President Davis, he's done a fantastic job of leading this institution, finding community partners, expanding where he can, and supporting people who really, really need support. I have a tremendous amount of faith in him and his managerial ability and his decision-making. I don't think he has at all abandoned technical education. I think the evidence is strong that technical education has grown at the same pace as all the other offerings at MCTC. And I don't think he takes a dim view of the technical professions at all. I think there's some issues and that need to be, you know, some additional data. Senator Olson disputes some of it, but I think it's pretty strong evidence of his commitment to his institution's mission.
Well, Chancellor, you mentioned that we would probably try not to eliminate the last program of its kind. So I think it would be useful if we could have information about if the other carpentry programs include cabinet making at the three other programs in the Minsky system in the metropolitan area, so that some of the students who have an interest in custom cabinet making and furniture making still have a place that they can go in the Minsky system and, you know, don't have to look for that in the private sector.
Yeah, Madam Chair,
if you could give that information to Dr. Weidman. I asked her today if she would look into it, and so tell her who she should call or respond to her when she calls.
And Madam Chair, I can elaborate a bit, and we'll follow up with Dr. Weidman afterward. I think Senator Olson is particularly concerned about the cabinet-making program, not the carpentry program. To be clear, there are three others in the metro area. They do include customized cabinet-making, but this program is the only program that was exclusively customized cabinet making. So there are outlets for people to do both production cabinet making, which is where most of the employment lies, but also customized cabinet making. And we'll work with our sister institutions to ensure, as we have, as was mentioned by the Senator, that part of their curriculum can grow as well. But we'll get the details to Dr. Weidman.
All right.
Just one more point I wanted to make. Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't think also President David was unnecessarily unfair in terms of dealing with his required cuts. You know, he kind of spread them evenly across administration, across the degree programs in liberal arts as well as technical education. So, this characterization that somehow we're stepping away from a commitment to technical education, I don't think is completely accurate.
Well, Madam Chair.
Senator Olson, then we're
going
to move
on. And on that point, some of the folks that have raised that issue, I have not had a chance to document whether there is that unfairness. I know that there have been in the process of merging, trying to consolidate regionally or eliminate duplicate programs. That's not what I'm talking about. I think we're talking about something that is unique, and the reason that I bring it up in this context is that this is a program that does involve a fairly extensive capital investment that once lost, one would never replace. And I think that the trends of today are such that this uniqueness has some real value. in terms of both what people are wanting to do as well as the demand for the service that may not be reflected in some of the kinds of data and employment data that we often use to make these decisions. And so that's the cautionary information that I would bring to the decision relative to this program. And it's very quickly, you know, being eliminated, the property disposed of, and putting something else in its place. I don't think that it can be assumed that these students are necessarily in a situation to go to it, take advantage of the, you know, what's maybe an auxiliary aspect of the other programs, either by location or by programming. Because I saw some excellence there that I hate to see disbanded. And, you know, if there's anything I could do to help to determine that that could, in fact, continue, I would certainly be willing to do that. I'm not being condemning of anything that's happening at Minneapolis. In fact, if anything, I think my stance should be viewed as being an advocate for them instead of the opposite. Even though I'm unhappy with this decision, sometimes you can close things or suspend them for a time. Spaces can be used for alternative functions, but some of these programs have unique equipment needs, and that's why if you dispose of them, you're ending the opportunity for doing something that may well have great demand. As I pointed out from these interviews, there's a concern that we're losing the generation of people who ought to know how to make and fix things. So that's my point.
I'm sure if I could just make one final comment. Thanks.
Senator Dipple.
I think Senator Olson is making all fair points, and I'm not in complete disagreement with her. And like I said, we're all entitled to advocate for those things that we think are great for Minnesota and Minnesotans. But absent additional resources, President Davis is going to have to eliminate something else at MCTC. That's just a simple fact. So what is that going to be? You know, do we get to participate in that decision too? I mean, and believe me, I'm going to have people on my phone
right,
talking about how important that is.
And I think it is our job to make sure that these decisions are made with, you know, good research and thoughtfulness and taking into fact the considerations that Senator Olson brought up about the difficulty to replicate something once it's destroyed. And hopefully the decision goes forward, then the equipment can still be used at other campuses and that we're not going to get rid of
that. If you like, Madam Chair, we would certainly work with our sister institutions first to make certain that equipment, that state investment, continues to be utilized for the benefit of students.
Okay, thank you very much. I know that Senator Clark wanted to make some comments. Senator Sharon, on this topic, though?
Yes, on this topic.
Okay, Senator Sharon.
This is Chancellor McCormick. This really is a request for both you and for our chair. We're talking about the bonding request today. That's our review, but we're getting into talking about something that we'll be talking about through the whole session in this committee, and that is, and so I would hope that the chair and the commissioner in the University of Minnesota would provide for us some clarity as to how the decreasing amount of revenue that's coming to the higher ed system is being resolved on the different campuses. Because it's not only programs like this, but it might be fewer sections of English that lengthen out the period of time that someone has to go to school. It might be reductions of support services on the campus. Each president is going to be making decisions because you won't operate with a deficit. And I'm hoping that we have that clearly articulated here, along with efforts, as Senator Roebling is talking about, and decisions that you've made about consolidations or integrations and not having repetitious services that can, in fact, as we think about new structures and forms of providing higher education, how is the board, how are you thinking about that? Otherwise, if we grow and spend more on operations and we're spending less or we have less to spend in the state, as you know, we all get concerned about where will that money be made up. Is it fundraising in the private sector? Is it passing it on to tuition for students? So I really hope in the course of the year we have very clear, transparent discussion about what's happening and how the campuses are trying to resolve that.
Madam Chair and Senator Sharon, I think if we'd like to take just a moment to tell you what we are doing by the middle of March, and I think it will answer some of your concerns. Laura King.
Thank you. Ms. King. Madam Chair, good afternoon. Laura King. Senator Sharon, we're working now on a report that you included in your omnibus bill last session, asking us to come in by the middle of March on a school-by-school basis with a narrative that talks about what their financial outlook is, what their program thinking is, what they've done so far to respond to the financial conditions and how they're thinking about the next several years. So that'll be a sort of a platform for us to have these conversations. It won't be a system-wide detailed answer to the issues you raise, but it will give you a school-by-school illustration of what they're doing. And then as we move into the 2012-2013 budget planning, yet this session, I hope we'll get some guidance from you on the kind of information you'd like us to be prepared to present to you.
Ms. King, was that in relation to the stimulus money and what was going to happen after the money went away?
No, Madam Chair. Well, it's sort of. What the writer asked us to do was prepare on a school-by-school basis a narrative and a financial outlook for 12 and 13 based on the appropriation outlook. And we've corresponded with your office and with the office of the chair and the other body to establish just what the sort of the foundation of that report is. So it'll talk about what we've done in 10 and 11 and how we're thinking about 12 and 13.
Okay. Senator Babbs, just to follow up. It's always helpful to me to have the data to sort of how have we reacted to a crisis. And that would be helpful, what happens when the stimulus money isn't there, all of those things. But also for us to be able to engage in a discussion with you about what the implications are of this trend for how we think about structuring and moving forward in the provision of higher education that we have to stay competitive at in this kind of which I don't think is a short-term trend, but a long-term trend that requires strategic long-term visioning.
Madam Chair and Senator Sharon, I think our board would agree with you 100%, and they are undertaking some conversations in the community this winter just along those lines. What's happening? How are we thinking about it? What do the years look like? How should we be thinking about the future? So we'll hopefully be well positioned to have that conversation with you.
Senator Roebling.
On this topic somewhat, I think about this too, and long-range planning. And I remember last year when we were sitting here talking about possible budget cuts for Minscu and the U of M, and I think you came in and said, if you make a cut of 20%, we're going to have to close. It would be we should technically close 10 campuses or something.
Something, right. I remember that frame. Yep.
And now you have had a pretty substantial cut. We're not talking about any campus closures. Okay. And we're talking about enhancing and expansion at various campuses. And one of the things I'm concerned about is the day may come when a couple of campuses have to indeed close. And I'd hate to be looking at that and saying, oh, what a shame. We just put a new library there. And we've just renovated this space. So how do we decide now, before we make those investments, if something like that has to occur with the climate that we have, are we going to pretend that might not happen? Or are we going to be realistic and say it might happen? And if it does, you know, maybe this is where it would happen, where the enrollment has not grown like it has at North Hennepin or Normandale. Where should we be making those investments? Have we been really looking at that?
Madam Chair, Senator Roebling, there's no doubt that the federal stimulus money had a positive impact on our budget outlook this biennium. The state appropriation reduction was $140 million, and the federal stimulus money was $80 million. So there's no doubt that that helped. When we look at our outlook for 12 and 13 and incorporate some assumptions about the state appropriation, along with enrollment assumptions, I think we modeled a 3% tuition increase. The schools show about a $40 million deficit system-wide on $1.8 billion in spending. And that's before there's any more reductions to reflect the most recent update to the economic forecast. What's maybe not as well noticed is that in the last 5 years, tuition and fee revenue has substantially outpaced state appropriation. We are no longer majority state supported. And so as the state support gets cut, while it has a very negative effect, it's cushioned by what's going on with tuition. We're now about two-thirds tuition revenue and one-third state appropriation. So keep that in your thinking as we go forward. We do think very carefully about where do we have growth when we're formulating the capital budget. But I think you heard the Chancellor say earlier, we think our obligation to Minnesota is to increase enrollment and to keep our doors open. And so our first planning parameter is what will it take to do that. We're not putting big additions on buildings that have flat or declining enrollment. If you look at the material Mr. Johnson presented, we're doing remodeling and HEPR-type asset preservation work on the really remote campuses that aren't showing strong growth. But we continue to hope to keep all our doors open and to increase our enrollment and our access across the state in order to increase the degree attainment across the state. I don't know if we'll be able to succeed at that. That's part of our planning right now, but that is our thinking.
And Chancellor. Chair and Senator Roebling, the other concern, deep concern that I have, one of the great principal values of this system is access and completion. And my worry is if you start eliminating some of the smaller institutions, they are very, it is going to be very difficult for those students. And I just use the situation in Minnesota West, 18,000 square miles, 2,300 students, five campuses, two centers. But what we've been able to do there is to go from formerly five presidents to having one president. We've used technology, and we've tended to pick, for instance, at Canby, we do the wind energy, and we might do dental hygiene there. And then some of the other things have to be delivered, and you've seen that as you visited online or some other way. And we've worked it out so a student at Canby could take a course at Willmar and get the credit there. We've got a lot of good things going with our accrediting process. But the access is the worry. And if you take up in the range from Virginia to International Falls, 100 miles, in some of the most difficult weather in North America. There's 300-400 students there. If you close that, what happens? First of all, if 100 of them could come down to Century, we don't have room. But my suspicion will be they won't go anywhere. And so that access for the people of Minnesota is such a core value for us, and it's very difficult. So we're looking for technology. We're looking for other ways, keeping the doors open, not offering everything, but finding a way. And many of these smaller technical colleges now just have two or three important programs, and the other things are coming online or from other campuses, trying to, with technology, to work through this without closing. The other thing, I've spent considerable time now in each of these communities, and you know if you were to talk to Senator Vickerman, he would tell you that the Canby situation, if you close that little place there, it has a tremendously negative effect in terms of that whole area because of the challenges. Now, the other good thing, there's two good things on the horizon that I'm hoping about. One is that the federal government is talking a great deal now about a major investment in the two-year colleges. And there could be, depending on how this works out, billions of dollars coming in to these institutions. So we might get lucky and have some federal funds, and most of this, as I understand, is being directed toward the two-year colleges. When that'll happen, I don't know. The second thing is these places that are fragile have had increases in enrollments. It's probably for the reasons that you suggest. I think Staples has increased enrollment, pretty fragile, but it's doing better. People are coming back. And then we met with over 350 of our business leaders this last year. I met with a number, and our presidents met with the rest. And they're saying the workforce they need is going to need the technical and community colleges. They're going to need that kind of work in order to stay competitive. So we may have some forces going in our right direction. And then I keep hoping, and I admit that I try to look at the glasses half full, I'm hoping because of the energy of the people of Minnesota and our quality of education and so on, that things will turn and that we will be able again, as I know all of you probably want to do, to invest in our most precious resource, the people of Minnesota. So we're trying to get through this difficult time, trying not to be whining, doing the very best we can, and hoping that as a result of three or four of those trends, there might be better days ahead.
Thank you very much, Chancellor. I appreciate those comments. Thank you, Ms. King. We have a few more members who wanted to comment before we wrap up. Senator Clark.
Thanks. Madam Chair, members, we were just having that conversation, I was beginning to think, gee, do I really want to be the one to come back and start talking about projects again? But having had a lot of thoughts that are very similar to both Senator Sharon's and Senator Roebling's, I actually think this is a good time to be talking about these two projects. So I think it's important that we're getting information about what cuts are going to be happening, what the impacts are on those institutions, the communities, the students, the businesses, et cetera. And it's really important that we're thinking long-term about our future. And when I look at a number of these projects, in addition to obviously just trying to upgrade or maintain some facilities, it does, I think there's the trends there about where are we moving into the future. So I think about the corporations that are telling us we've got a well-prepared workforce right now, but they're worried about what's going to happen in 10 or 12 years. The need to be having education where our students are, especially for first-generation students. Those things are very challenging. But I wanted to make sure I was at least touching on the two that happened to be in my district. I see former Representative Opatz back there and know how important that Normandale one is, too, so I don't want to sound like I'm just thinking about ours. I know what the Workforce Center realigning. Those are really important things as we're thinking about our future. These two that are in here, they're projects 20 and 22. We've given the planning money for them. One is the last phase of the applied sciences at St. Cloud State. You may recall we've done some renovation of some pretty old laboratories. This particular piece would be an integrated science and engineering facility. Right now we have about 100% placement, 100%. Not even 85, but 100% placement for students that are coming out of programs. What's different about this building, for those of you who haven't been on a bonding tour, and I know a number of you have, is that instead of thinking about co-location, it really is about integrating and having spaces that are flexible enough to change depending upon what the grants might be. Unlike the U, this is applied bioscience. I wouldn't be doing some of what we're seeing down at the Mayo, et cetera. But certainly for the central part of the state, this is pretty key to the future of what's happening there. There have been a number of partnerships with CentraCare, the Technical College, St. Ben's, and others. So this is a pretty significant project, certainly in terms of construction, but it's the last piece. So I want you to know, after we're done with this, there will not be another major piece at St. Cloud State for a while. The jobs that it will create in the long run on the private sector side are going to be pretty critical. And then the Technical College, you may recall, we a few years ago worked with them. There had been an opportunity to purchase the Health Partners facility, and they've been utilizing the basement there for allied science, particularly on the nursing types of programs. And Health Partners is finally moving out, but not surprisingly, they need to adapt that. This is one of those campuses that's been growing at great strides in conjunction with St. Cloud State, are both trying to be meeting the healthcare needs in our area. And when we were talking about which corridor was it you were talking about?
Southwest.
We need to finish North Star because we've got a horde of people coming all the way up to St. Cloud. And that is part of, if you think about it, we are a connected community. St. Cloud State, most of the students come from a 45-mile radius, and again, high placement, the Technical College, it will be 30 miles. Those are all people who are going to be getting jobs back at home. So as I will tell you from our kind of business climate, where the jobs are growing are in these areas. And as we're thinking as a state competitively, we've got to, as we all know, for those of us on K-12, we've been talking about the STEM areas and how important it is that we are training our students and retraining students in those areas. So hopefully those are projects that we're going to be able to do. And again, they're not alone. There's some good ones in other parts of the state. But I think as we're talking about short and long term, how are we changing the business plan on the university and college campuses to be better making the decisions in the future, to me, would be my other part I'd add to what you were suggesting, Sarah Sharon. So thank you.
Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll try to be fast. We went to St. Cloud to the Metro. Now I'm going to ask you to think about that high-speed rail that goes from the Twin Cities to Rochester. And you are at project
from St. Paul.
You're at project number 23. Couple things I want to point out on 23. One, I think it does an excellent job of addressing the priorities that MNSCU has identified with workforce needs and partnerships and innovation. This is the project. The second thing for members of the committee, one of the attributes of this is that we will be able to further capitalize on the waste-to-energy facility that currently exists in Rochester that we partially funded with bonding proceeds in a previous year. So I think that's a real positive. In the interest of time, I'm not going to ask MNSCU to comment on this, but I would like to say that this is a partnership project between MNSCU and DEED. And MNSCU, you have done a terrific job of laying out your part of this deal. So thank you very much. As you know, we were recently in conversations with your board member and commissioner on the DEED aspect of this project. There's a hearing in Senator Tomasoni's committee next week, I believe, where we will talk about more specifically about the DEED portion of this project. And my strong suggestion to the chancellor today and to the board members who are in attendance today is to follow up with your MNSCU board member, because it is critical that both components of this project come together quite quickly in order that we can be successful. So I need your help.
Okay, thank you very much. Finally, Senator Tomasoni has a project that he wanted to share with us. It's not on the MNSCU list. It's something new that's just come up, and he's going to talk about it briefly, and then we're going to see if we need more follow-up on Thursday.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just want to point out that I actually wanted a train up to Cotton to build the Viking Stadium a few years back, just so you guys remember that. But we didn't get any of those trains either.
We already got the don't you have hockey Hall of Fame or something?
Yeah, we got stuff up there. But anyway, I'm not worried about that at this point. And, Madam Chair, if you'll just allow me for 1 second to talk about one of the vetoed projects, which is the Mesabi Community or Technical College Shop Space Addition. And we talked about how people have to travel to go to college. Well, one of the issues at this particular place, and several of you have been there several times, is that not only do they have to travel to get to the college, they then have to travel from the college to get to the educational site, which is about 7 or 8 miles, and back and forth in order to use the services. And I think that one of the things that we never did when we toured is we never actually toured the site where they were being educated, which is an old dilapidated warehouse that doesn't have any parking and actually has outdoor porta potties for the kids, and it's just a totally inappropriate place to be educating our students. And so hopefully this time around it doesn't get vetoed and that it actually gets issued. The project that you did mention, Madam Chair, is in regards to a new program on the Iron Range called the Iron Range Engineering Program. And we've spent about 2 years in developing this program, and the reason we developed it was because a need was identified by both business and industry for engineers in the region. I know this is on the MNSCU radar screen, and I do want to compliment MNSCU for the capital budget proposal that they have put out, because I think they've done it a serious job of considering the needs of the system itself as well as considering the needs of the economy and having these projects ready to go when the money is let and putting people back to work and getting projects done. So I from that standpoint, I think you've done a very good job. The engineering program took about 2 years to develop. It is a partnership between the Northeastern Higher Education District, the Iron Range Resource and Rehabilitation Board, the Minnesota State University at Mankato, the University of Minnesota in Duluth, the Iron Range Higher Education Committee, and the Minnesota Center for Engineering and Manufacturing Excellence, as well as a myriad of business and industry partnerships throughout the region. And essentially what's happened is that we launched it in the fall, and we already have, I think, over 30 students that have signed up for this program. And it's innovative and new from the standpoint that not only will they be getting classroom instruction, but they'll also be actually learning right on the job using the businesses in the industry in the area to help the engineers learn their craft right there at the site of the work. The request, and I don't know if they've handed out a copy.
Yep, they handed it out.
Is for $6 million to do some refurbishing and remodeling at Virginia College to be able to facilitate the program even better than what we have right now, as well as to acquire some privately owned housing facilities on the campus, and to have everybody right there be able to actually have a place to stay and learn. And I think that while this is late in this year, as far as the bonding cycle is concerned, that this is appropriate for this year's bonding cycle because of what's going on the Iron Range in regards to several of the projects that are actually happening, whether it be SR Steel or PolyMet or Keewatin Tech or any of those big projects. So the program's up and running. There are people enrolling, and it has some need for some physical remodeling. And like I said, I know Minsky has it on the radar screen, and although it's not in this recommendation, I would like to be able to try and work with them. And I don't have anybody here to testify right today, but if anybody wants to hear any more in-depth testimony from anybody from the area, I'm sure I can get them down here for Thursday.
Okay, thank you. Any questions from anyone? Senator Roebling?
I just wanted to ask Senator Tomasoni, is it a full, well, really, engineering is a five-year degree. Is it a full five-year MS or not MS, but BS degree?
I don't know that I should give you a bad answer, but I'm fairly certain that there's that they'll be qualified engineers at the end of the course that they're taking here, and that there's two-year degrees as well as four-year degrees available in this particular program.
It's a partnership with a four-year college.
Yeah, with a partnership with a four-year college. So you have UMD that is doing one of the partnership instructings, and as well as Mankato. So we have schools that are doing engineering degrees, helping out with the educational aspect of it. And I don't know if anybody wants to add to that or not, but.
Well,
Chancellor.
Chair and Senator Tomasoni.
We've been in discussions, but it didn't get into the board's consideration, so it never went through this process that Trustee Hightower explained. But we've been involved in conversations, and maybe there's someone in the room who can correct me, but it will be, this early program, it will be Mankato's engineering degree. It will have the certification and so on of Mankato, and I've actually met with some of the students that are now getting started. So I think the intent is it would be Mankato's degree. I can't speak for the University of Minnesota. But the board has not taken a position on it because it just didn't go through the process. And I think it only came to this point in 8 weeks. Would that be fair?
I think that's fair, Chancellor, yes.
Do you have a process for starting new degree programs, though? I mean, has it been?
Well, it's probably, and I'm here again, if Mary Davenport, anybody would like to help me with this. When we offer a baccalaureate degree on the Normandale campus or on the Mesaubi campus, that baccalaureate university brings its accreditation to the table.
So it's really up to them.
So it's that program that has been there, and we would have promised the accreditors that the same quality that we offered in one place would be delivered, and that's true all over the metro where our universities are offering baccalaureate programs. So they're an existing program that's being accredited,
new
being
location
offered in a different location.
Davenport, did you have anything to add?
Thank you, Senator Pappas. No, Chancellor's got that correct. It's an off-campus site program from Minnesota State Mankato.
Okay, Senator Roebling.
Related to that, these later requests or things that come up that need attention but haven't been put into this long process, because I saw that started a year ago at least, if not more. And we see these projects over and over. I mean, having been on this committee for a while, I've seen some of these three or four times, I think. And so they're moving up the process. But how do you consider those that might have developed sudden urgency? I mean, whether it's a program like this where they actually have some economic projects going on in the range that they want to tie this to, or, you know, I'm going back to Normandale again, and when we visited there and the crowded conditions that they have, and maybe unexpected a couple of years ago. But then here they are way on the bottom of these lists, which are sort of prioritized, and it's going to take them years to come up to the top. Are we sure that the ones that have now reached the top are still urgent to complete, or should some of them be substituted, and does that happen very often?
Madam Chair and Senator Roebling, we there's some of both in this process. When a president works on a program, and particularly when you've funded the planning, we feel we've already made a big investment. We need to go ahead with it. But except for that, we relook at that list every year, and it has a lot of continuity. But if there were major changes in something, there is that opportunity to examine it all again. But when the program's gone through and you've decided to make the investment in the architectural planning and all of that, you know, we got to be pretty sure we've already spent money and we need to go ahead. Now, if there would be some earth-shaking decision or catastrophic situation that changed that, obviously we can look at it. Just like the one on the land acquisition, we actually said we're going to change that today. But we do look. Now what I would have to say, though, as we stand now, the board has given its recommendation. We've given it to you. So I will be sticking with the board's recommendations. But that doesn't mean we would oppose the other project. We've had one or two slip through the process. We, over the years, that picked up momentum. The stadium at Marshall did not come as a recommendation. It was considered later, and there was the unusual circumstance there. There was external funding that made that a project that seemed viable. So this just hasn't gone through the process. If it goes, if you all decide it goes, I would not, though, so you know where I'm standing, I wouldn't be in a position to say cut out one of the board's plans so we could do that one. I mean, I wouldn't do that because I've got my marching orders from the board. I helped create that. I don't mean to not have responsibility. But if you all decided you needed to do that, we've been actually part of it. It's not something we're surprised about. But it just didn't go through the process. But there is flexibility. Al, have I done? Are you okay with that? I mean, we're not locked in. The other thing that I want to say, the presidents are sitting here. We had a problem that I believe existed when I came, and I picked it up from the legislators and others. We had a process where there was no central oversight and management, and we had everybody criticizing each other's projects and so on. And I actually heard from the legislators, get your act together, and somehow you heard there was 3 times as many projects as we recommended. Well, a president that didn't get a project and still has a good case is now being a good team member and supporting the project that is not on that campus. So we have some sensitivity toward that loyalty, mm-hmm. the person that's worked through. And my perfect example, Madam Chair, just to give you an example and not be abstract about it, we desperately needed work at St. Paul College. It was embarrassing. We needed to make a major investment in the technical part of that college. Well, there was a time somebody wanted to pull it out and roll with it, but we said, no, it's in the process. The president said, I'm going to play the game the right way. He got them in there. We did it, and, of course, it's a thanks to you and the support of
I think he got vetoed, though, once.
It's a tremendous project. So we're trying to be respectful of that, but we can change and should change if new circumstances come into the picture. We have been already supportive of this project, though, by supporting Mankato and our two-year college working together on this. So we're already supporting it. It's just the structure that didn't come through the process.
Members, thank you for staying. We're going to meet again on Thursday with the University of Minnesota. Thank you, Chancellor,
thanks.
And others for coming. And we don't have our per diem sheets today, so you'll have them on Thursday. And if you're not coming on Thursday, then have your LAs send them to me. All right.